Today's Feast of the Archangels, Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, gives us an opportunity to reflect once again on the mysterious spirit world. Mysterious and beautiful, but definitely mysterious. And that's why we need the faith of the church, the guidance of the church, to get this straight. Let me start with the incident from the recent news. I think it was 2 weeks ago today, there was a report from Bohol that some 200 students were exhibiting strange behavior in their high school, and somebody fainted, somebody had seizures, someone started speaking incoherently, and all kinds of strange behavior. And so the report was that this was a mass possession, 200 possessed students. Or the other side said this was mass hysteria. Did you see that in the news? It was in the secular news. I didn't see any mention of it in the Catholic press, but the secular news picked it up, 200 possessed students, somewhere in Bohol. Okay, you know what happens when these incidents take place? Immediately, especially now with social media, immediately there is the popular explanation that evil spirits possessed these young girls, and one of them has a third eye, and she saw a white lady 2 nights ago in the rice field, and she knew something bad was going to happen, and she told all her friends, and then everybody starts getting concerned about the evil spirits that are floating all around the school, and some student threw a rock at a bolete tree, and everyone knows that the bolete tree is possessed, and the aswang came out and frightened all the children, and blah, blah, blah. And that's how it happens. Within about 10 seconds, there's an explanation for this mysterious behavior of these students. A little bit after that comes the official explanation of the government. This is mass hysteria. They bring in their barangay officials and they cart these children off to the hospital, get them checked out. As it turned out, two students were actually admitted to the hospital. I don't know what officially was considered their disease, but the secular press puts possession in the quotation marks. It's clearly mass hysteria. It's a psychological phenomenon. It's easily influenced young people. No spiritual explanation at all. So these are the two extremes. The one is that under every rock there's a spirit, and every albulario can tell you that if you just need this concoction to defend yourself, and that these are certain places where you don't go, and you know, so you don't disturb the spirits. That's one extreme. The other extreme, and that's very popular in the provinces, as you know. But the other extreme is that everything has a perfectly natural explanation, scientific, and that mass hysteria is a psychological phenomenon among young people or people who are under pressure, who have had traumatic experiences. And then there's the church. Okay, this is where we have to go. We're not in either of these two extremes. And usually the church, when someone finally consults a priest and says, what's going on here? The priest will say, well, what did they eat for breakfast? Or did anyone take their blood pressure? Usually the church's response is, what's the condition of these people that you're saying is so unusual? Maybe they went to school without eating and they fainted. Maybe some street vendor, you know, sold them a tainted squid balls or some food that wasn't healthy for them and they got sick. On the other hand, maybe a group of these students is under the influence of evil spirits. So first of all, we check out the natural phenomenon. What's their physical condition? What's their psychological condition? But then we also ask, what is the spiritual condition? Have they been participating in some occult practices? Have they been going to the albulario and opening themselves to spirits that are not on their side? Is there some influence of evil spirits at work? It's not that easy to see immediately which of these explanations is valid, but the church knows that there are both natural explanations and spiritual explanations, and they both have to be taken into consideration. There was one priest, a prominent priest, who declared that there's no such thing as evil spirits. I don't know where he got the authority to say such a thing, but the church knows otherwise. In fact, practically every page of the Bible has some mention of angels or of evil spirits. And this is what today's feast is supposed to help us understand. In the order of God, in the vast creation of God, there are natural things. There are plants that affect our health, and there are phenomena that affect how we feel and how we experience things, yes. But then there are not only plants and animals and human beings, there are also spirit beings. Pure spirits created by God. The tradition is they were created by God at the very beginning. They were created before the material world. And these spirit beings have a very specific, each have a very specific task to do in the plan of God. Very powerful. Now, that sounds to some people like it's mythology and something from the pre-scientific era, when they used to believe that someone had to push the planets around and someone had to make the sun rise, so it must be some kind of a spirit, kind of a baptizing of the pagan gods. That's how some people will interpret it. And then they'll look at a statue of St. Michael, you know, big wings and a big sword, and there's a dragon, and they'll say, well, obviously that's mythology. And the church says, no, that is not mythology. Not maybe the wings and the sword. Yeah, those are symbolic to tell us something about spirit beings. But we're talking about real, powerful beings. Much more powerful, probably, than we can even imagine. In the scriptures, whenever anyone sees an angel, they're practically frightened out of their shoes. They can't take it in, or they think it's God himself. I mean, they can't, it's very hard to distinguish from a human perspective between an angel and God himself. That's clear from the scriptures. So we're talking about some beings which are pure spirits, and they have they are powerful reflections of God. I'm talking about the good spirits now. We also know that from the beginning, some of these pure spirits rebelled against God. And so they became very powerful enemies of God and of anyone who's on God's side. And that's the warfare we heard about in today's first reading. War broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels battled against the dragon and its angels. So now, once we talk about dragons, people are going to think we're talking about mythology again. The dragon is obviously a symbol. And it even says here, the dragon, the ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan. And so these are ways to describe a powerful, primeval spirit enemy. An enemy of God, an enemy of everybody who loves God or wants to follow God. So this battle is going on. Now, once we understand this, then we can use this real knowledge that comes by faith, to understand some of the phenomena that are in the world, both good and bad. We can see with the eyes of faith that we are protected and guided. And we can't always see it, but sometimes it's obvious that something just happened in an extraordinarily beautiful way. We were saved from a disaster, or we had a narrow escape from something that would have been terrible. And we say, well, I didn't save myself, and certainly God intervened and saved me, but did he use an angel? Certainly he did, because he's always using angels. And then when we hear about evil things in the world, we say, well, how could anyone come up with something that bad? How do these drug pushers, how do these human traffickers, how do these abusers, how do the people get like that? Where do they even get ideas like that? These people with child pornography, or these people who are you know, selling children into sex rings. Where does that stuff come from? That doesn't come naturally to people. You say, well, you know, that can only be explained, even rationally, by some evil that is more than human. And now we're talking about the spiritual battle. There is a spiritual battle that rages and has raged from the beginning, but it rages, and the battleground is especially human affairs and human hearts. There are probably evil spirits and angels battling you know, in places we've never, we don't know about in, you know, in outer space. That doesn't affect us. But the real heart of the battleground is the human family and each human heart. That's why it's important for us to know that we have the angels on our side. Because otherwise, we will be frightened, intimidated, and overwhelmed by the idea that we have these very powerful enemies. So today, being the feast of Saints Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael, we say, well, Michael, we know from the scriptures, is a warrior. We know, it's like this was in this very reading from the book of Revelation, he's a warrior. He's a victorious warrior, and his victory comes from the victory of Jesus Christ, from the power of the blood, the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, the blood of the Lamb. That's how Michael gets his power, from God. Where does Satan get his power? From nature. He was created powerful, but he doesn't tap into the power of God. He rebels against God. That's why he's always destined to lose in the long run. Much more powerful than we are, but not more powerful than God. So we have confidence in victory when we rely on Michael and the good angels, because that's our way of relying on God. Now, why does God use angels at all? He's much more powerful than angels or demons. And this is an aspect of how God prefers to work. This is God's style is to allow participation. Of course, he could do everything himself. He doesn't need any help. He doesn't need us either. But he, because he's love, he wants to share love with as many people as are willing to participate. And the good angels are, the reason why they're so brilliant, they're so fiercely powerful in their light, is because they're filled with divine love. The power of the angels is divine love. And my point is that God wants that love to be spread. That's the nature of love, to be extended to others. So he wants to have participants. He wants to have cooperators. It's mysterious to us, but it's important for us to recognize that's how God works. And we're used to it in the human level. I mean, in fact, it's happening right now. You think, I'm the one speaking. And yes, I'm the one speaking. But God wants to use the preacher in order to convey his word to the people. Now, God could speak directly to your heart. Of course he can. And he is. But he also uses intermediaries. And this is what he does all the time. So our friends, our family members, our neighbors, members of the community, whenever we do good for one another, well, God is using us to do good for one another. The same principle, but with greater power, let's say, to a higher degree, applies in the case of the angels. Well, God could do it himself, but he likes to work through angels. So today's feast simply opens the eyes of our hearts to the reality and the mission of the holy angels. They fight for us, they protect us, they guide us, they heal us. They are instruments of God on our behalf. They're good news to us. We're not intimidated by the spiritual battle. We should know about it, because otherwise we're likely to fall. But we should know about it, but without fear. We know about it, and we ask the angels to protect us in the midst of the battle that rages. So there's a lot more that could be said about the angels, even individually, Michael's specific role, Gabriel's specific role, Raphael's specific role. But for now, I think it's good enough for us to say, this is how God has created things. This is how God works. Let us open ourselves to the work of God and to the great work that he does through his angels.